The following is brought to you by the Starfleet Podcast Network, SPN, The Spin.
I feel ashamed that I have never once said you draw me like one of your French girls. That is terrible.
A red alert.
Hey guys, V-Man, No Budget Productions, and we are doing Critical Not Cynical. The film we're going to be watching is Voices of the Past, and with me today is Admiral Sam Grissom, Frank Parker himself. How are we doing tonight, Frank?
Doing excellent. Doing excellent.
Good. And joining us is Glenn Wolf and Candace. How are we doing tonight, guys?
Great. Thank
Good.
You.
Good. So for all of you guys that are joining us, we're going to be watching in just a few seconds, Voices of the Past. This is a film from Federation Files. It came out about, 3 years ago? Is that right, Glenn?
That sounds about right.
Yeah, ish. Yeah. So let's delve into it. We'll watch it. And then after the film's over, we'll go ahead and review it and then chat with you guys. So with that being said, let's dive right in.
Are you coming to the luncheon?
Okay.
Sorry. Thank you. Come on, Faith. We better go. We don't want to be the last ones to arrive.
Oh, that's your great-grandmother's old diary? I'm not sure why Mom even kept it.
Something Goodwill wants that.
You're probably right about that. So, what should we do with it?
I think I'll keep it. As a matter of fact, I want to keep this entire box.
Are you sure, Faith? This is just a bunch of worthless old relics.
I know, Mom, but you did name me after her, and I barely knew her. Maybe I can get to know her through all this old stuff.
Sure. Okay, hon. Well, I'm going to go get a cup of coffee. You want one?
I'll take one. Thanks, Mom.
The wedding plans are in full swing. I managed to get 3 full weeks of leave. Jeff's mom thinks we should go to Niagara Falls, but we are going on a cruise around the Bahamas, and then taking a tour through the Mayan ruins. We want to make a real adventure out of this honeymoon.
Faith! Turn that light out and go to sleep. You have school tomorrow.
New files. I just found these in the latest batch of government declassified files.
Anything good?
Not yet.
Is this the search for terrestrial alien residents?
Yes. I'm Investigator Oakley. This is Investigator Brown. What can we do for you?
I'm Faith, Faith Golterman. I feel ridiculous.
No need to be nervous. You obviously have something important to talk about.
It sounds crazy.
I'm sure we've heard crazier.
Well, I'm sure you've heard of Roswell.
July 1947, Roswell, New Mexico. The site of the most famous UFO crash in North America. Officially denied and covered up by the US government. Yes, we are aware of it.
My great-grandmother served in the military. She was stationed at Wright-Patterson and present at Hangar 18 with the aliens. She helped them escape.
And how did you come by this information?
I recently found her diary.
Man has kept records diligently since the advent of the written word. His accumulation of knowledge has grown exponentially with each passing decade. As he moved out into space, this knowledge was combined with that of many other races to create the single largest repository of information in the known universe. The repository is known as Memory Alpha. This is where you can access the Federation files.
Don't spill it this time.
Yeah. This is incredible.
Really? What makes that more credible than this? June 2nd, 1937, Biloxi, Mississippi. Strange lights are reported in the sky south of the city. Several citizens called the police in the military base. No official explanation was ever given. This report is a collection of the reports called in that night.
It was kept classified until 3 months ago. That should tell you something.
What?
But the government took it seriously. Anyways, look at the last page.
A witness saw a local farmer's truck floating in the sky in a beam of light. An investigation turned up no evidence. Case closed.
True, nothing was found. Not the farmer, nor his truck. The farmer, Eugene Whitaker, was never seen again. His wife filed a missing persons report, but he was never located.
You did not answer my question. Why is that diary more credible than this missing persons file?
Since you've not read it, I'll forgive your skepticism, but this is a first-hand report by an eyewitness that can be verified. You did research the two names.
Faith Garland Carlson served at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in 1947. She married Jeff Carlson, a scientist employed by the U.S. Air Force from 1943 through 1947. He was present at Wright-Patterson in July 1947.
This could blow the lid off the government's cover-up of their knowledge of UFOs, extraterrestrials, alien technology, and who knows what else.
You know how it will go. A soldier with mental issues, either hallucinating, on drugs, or just crazy. One piece of actual physical evidence is all it would take. But all we have here is a diary by some crazy woman and some sketches drawn by the same crazy woman.
It's the drawing that's the most credible. And maybe she had some actual evidence. Didn't Miss Gilderman say she had a box of her grandmother's stuff?
Great-grandmother. And yes, she did.
We need to look through that stuff.
This does not look anything like a standard gray.
Hello?
Miss Golderman. This is Detective Brown from Star Investigations.
Please, call me Faith.
Okay, Faith. And we were wondering about your great-grandmother's other things.
What about them?
We were hoping we can go through them.
That's okay with me.
Great. Can we meet you?
I can bring them in.
Oh, you sure?
Yeah.
Great. We look forward to seeing you.
So why does everyone else see a big-eyed alien, and this woman sees a big-eared alien? And why does that give her credibility?
Cover up. The government released the descriptions of the Greys. That way they can monitor close encounters and be able to tell the real events from the more unreliable reports.
Sometimes you are just a little too far out there. So if I understand you, if someone reports seeing a bug-eyed alien, the government ignores it because they created that image. But if someone reports seeing a large head and large-eared alien, they're all over it?
Exactly. Lunch?
You buying?
Sure, let's go. What's this?
I thought it may have been an iPad left at her house by someone. I don't think it's hers.
Could I look at this a little closer? I need to verify its manufacture date.
Sure. It's of no use to me.
Can I help you with this?
No, I have it.
We'll be in touch.
Was a little rude.
This symbol, I've seen it before.
Really? Where?
I don't know, but I'll find it.
You look like hell. Did you work all night?
we were onto something.
Really?
Yes, that symbol, I knew I'd seen it before. An internet search revealed multiple matches. After I filtered out the corporate logos and other business-related matches, I found this. Check it out.
Okay, what exactly am I looking at?
Personal correspondence between Samuel Clemens and Jack London. Notice that several of the letters have the symbol drawn next to the signature.
I see. This is Mark Twain's iPad.
If I thought you were serious, I'd be mad at you right now, but I need you to go to Detroit and run down a lead for me.
I'm going to Detroit to interview a lunatic who was kidnapping people for medical experiments?
Yes, but specifically I want you to talk to the arresting officers. I'll send you their contact information while you're en route. Your plane leaves in 3 hours.
Okay. What am I looking for?
I don't know, but this guy Loomis claims that there were others involved who had laser guns.
Got it. And where are you going?
New York City Police Archives.
Take a shower first.
July 7th, 1947. Today the world changed. I had never given any thought to life outside of our planet, but today I met three living beings that came to Earth in a flying ship. The military had tasked Jeff with establishing communication with the aliens. It seems impossible. Jeff is not a linguist, and the general will not authorize any additional help.
Hello?
I can only locate one of the arresting officers. I just sent you his address and phone number.
Okay. Got it.
Ladies and gentlemen, the captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign. If you haven't already done so, please stow your carry-on luggage underneath the seat in front of you or in an overhead bin. We remind you that this is a non-smoking flight. Smoking is prohibited on the entire aircraft. Tampering with, disabling, or destroying the lavatory smoke detectors is prohibited by...
So the two people you were helping were cops?
As it turns out, no. They must have been MIBs.
MIBs? Do you mean Men in Black?
Yes, they had to be.
You did not mention that they were wearing black. And didn't you say one of them was a woman?
Well, yes, one was a woman, maybe an alien hybrid.
I see. Men in black that do not wear black.
Nor were they men, and one was actually an alien. What made you come to that conclusion?
The MIB part or the woman?
Well, both.
They must have been MIBs. They had laser guns and were shooting at some things that looked like lizard men. And the female had a weird complexion, and her eyebrows looked fake.
What do you mean, fake?
Well, they were kind of straight, but at an incline. Even weirder. Pretty sure her ears were pointed. She tried to hide them under her hair, but when she was shooting at the lizard man, they popped out.
Women shake their eyebrows all the time.
But tell me about these lizard men.
I didn't get a real good look at him, but he was pretty tall, and it looked like he was wearing some kind of armor.
How is Detroit?
Well, interviewing that case is always fun.
Sorry, but as you know, most of these leads turn out to be dead ends.
Maybe not.
Really?
So what do you think?
That's amazing. What does it mean?
I'm not sure. Oh, I almost forgot. I also obtained this.
A hair?
Supposedly from the female alien in Loomis's car. The crime lab at the time came up with nothing from it.
So they just gave it to you?
Not exactly. Evidence goes missing all the time. Anyway, with all the DNA records available now, we have a better chance at matching it.
Well, that's true. With the general public giving their DNA to every genealogy site imaginable, the government has access to the vast majority of people's DNA, so we definitely should have it tested.
I'll drop it off at the lab on my way home.
Well, you're not the only one with some new evidence. Look at this.
Okay. So where did you get this?
It came from the wing camera of an Air Force fighter in 1960. It was one of the recently declassified files. Now tell me if I'm wrong, but that's a photo of an unidentified object in U.S. airspace. And furthermore, it has identifying markings on it written in English.
It appears to say NCC-1701. That seems to be a military designation. Is it an experimental aircraft?
That's what I thought, but the rest of the file records that the object just appeared on radar out of nowhere. Fighters were scrambling. One fighter even got close enough to get several pictures of it before it vanished as quickly as it appeared.
So, one arm of the government did not know what the other was doing.
Maybe, maybe not. I'm still trying to track down the pilot. Captain John Christopher. Now, maybe it was an errant stealth technology test, but I think there's more to it than that.
That actually seems to make a lot of sense.
Well, we'll see. Well, I've got a cheating husband stakeout tonight, so read this and I'll go over the Detroit files and we'll compare notes tomorrow.
This could take a while. Do you want me to do the stakeout?
No, it's okay, but thanks.
Out.
Got the goods on the cheating bastard.
We got a payday with one night's work. And while you were sleeping in, I found her.
I did not know you lost her.
Very funny. I mean, I found her on the internet.
Really?
Maybe. I scanned this in and did the usual searches on the FBI databases. You know, discreetly.
And they had something on her?
No. But facial recognition scans matched her to a photo in a local newspaper from Carbon Creek, Pennsylvania.
That's fantastic. So you have her current address?
Not exactly. The article was from 1957. She was in the background of a photo about a local mining cave-in.
I don't see how this falls into our kind of research.
I didn't either. But I started perusing the local newspaper at the time, and I found out that 6 months prior to that photo being taken of her, there was a meteor strike 2 miles outside of town.
And?
No and. No crater was found. Just a couple reports of something impacting. Then, we have this photo of the same woman who is suspected of being an alien in Detroit. It just seems interesting.
Well, it does look like her, but honestly, facial recognition is an imperfect technology, and that match is hardly conclusive. But since we're on the subject, and given the time that I had last night to go through the new files, check this out.
Aren't these the same two from yesterday?
Hold your horses.
Well, I see pointed ears and tapered eyebrows. So where are these from?
Well, that's just it. This pair is from a police report in New York City from 1930. They were caught stealing clothes and then they attacked a police officer and escaped. This pair is from a report for a call for help from a woman in an office. 1967, New York City, and Miss Roberta Lincoln placed a call for help. Police responded. The men escaped from a third floor office with no exterior doors. These were her descriptions of the men, but they were never located. And when police tried to follow up, Miss Lincoln refused to cooperate.
And the third set?
Oddly, they're from a report at McKinley Rocket Base on the very same day in 1967. They were arrested for trespassing during a rocket launch. They had several unusual handheld devices, and one of the base security officers said that he saw them disappear into sparkles of light. Even more interesting, a nuclear warhead rocket test went awry the very same day.
I'm sure you noticed. In two of these, the men have logos on their shirts, resembling the image on that iPad.
Yes, I did.
So what does it mean?
I don't know. But I'd like to see if we can find this Roberta Lincoln, if she's still alive.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good news.
There you go.
Thank you.
All right, let's have it.
I found Roberta Lincoln. And she is coming down to talk to us.
So let's compare notes before she gets here. What'd you think of the diary?
So it was very compelling. A UFO crashed. Three aliens survived. First, they said that they were here to help us develop new technology. Then they said that they were here to invade us. Then they said they accidentally crashed here from the future. A fourth alien shows up that can change shape. Then Garland and her fiancé help them all escape by using the energy from a nuclear blast.
And I checked, and there was a report of a UFO sighting during that atomic test.
The facts in this diary that can be verified do suggest that it can be true. We have everything but a smoking gun. Come in.
I have a delivery.
Okay.
There you go.
All right.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
You too.
This is it.
Well?
They were able to extract the DNA from the sample.
Great. So we can run it through our genealogy database and find out who this woman was.
No, we can't.
Why not? While a complete DNA sample was extracted and evaluated, the results must be considered tainted and not valid. The DNA results indicate that this sample belongs to a creature whose cellular structure is based on copper.
I don't think we're going to be finding a copper-based person with DNA filed in on an online database.
That's true, but you do realize we now have the smoking gun we were looking for.
Oh, I'm looking for Mrs. Oakley.
I'm Karen Oakley.
Hi, I'm Roberta Lincoln. Do you want to talk to me?
Yes. Yes, Miss Lincoln. Please have a seat.
Be good, Ariel. Her name is Ariel.
Thank you for coming, Miss Lincoln.
Oh, just call me Bobby, honey.
Okay, Bobby. As I explained on the phone, we're looking into some cold cases and came upon a file generated when you called about a break-in at an office building you were working at in the 60s.
Oh, I just love the 60s.
We were wondering if you remember anything about these two men.
He's a handsome fellow. Is he your husband?
No, Miss Lincoln. These men broke into your office.
I haven't been working for years. Do you mean somebody broke into my house?
No, Miss Lincoln. 1968, Manhattan. You were working for an encyclopedia company.
Oh, nobody uses encyclopedias anymore. They just go look up things in a computer.
No, Miss Lincoln. Do you recognize these men?
Is that so?
You can talk to your cat?
Sure. She said it's time for dinner.
I hope she wasn't confessing to making a deposit in my office.
Well, Miss Lincoln, Bobby, I think we are through here. If by chance you remember anything about the break-in, please call us.
It is lovely seeing the both of you. You make a lovely couple.
Are you sure we should let her walk the streets alone? She seems slightly confused.
Slightly? Well, she did find her way here just fine. She's not alone. She has Ariel.
Maybe so. But here in a while, I think I'll give her a call to make sure she made it home.
So, they have one diary from 1947, a personal computer from about hundreds of years in the future, and one hair of a Vulcan.
That's correct.
Well, they do have fragmented police reports on time travel incursion.
What would be the danger if they put it all together and discover time travel is possible? And Earth has been visited by beings from the future.
The general population has been more receptive to the idea of extraterrestrial life. The knowledge of time travel this early in development for human beings, it could be catastrophic.
So, all the evidence, meager as it is, must go away.
Yes, and soon. Lincoln, they're intelligent. And I do believe that they're not afraid to share the evidence or their theories openly.
Agreed. Tonight, then. Let's go get some food.
About it all night, and I think I found the answer.
Me too, but go ahead.
I know it sounds crazy, but if I said time travel, what would you say?
Exactly what I was thinking. You know, Mark Twain wrote about time travel, possibly through experience.
The Roswell aliens, what did they call themselves?
Ferengi.
One of their stories was that they accidentally landed here through a time warp.
Well, the MIB alien and the woman you found on the internet could be the same person, if she was a time traveler.
And the pointy-eared guy could have been New York and McKinley at the same time if he was able to travel through time.
Well, we'll be able to prove it after we crack the iPad.
And we have extraterrestrial DNA.
Prepare to make history. I got the iPad.
The hair sample is gone too.
No sign of forced entry.
Start investigations. You say a corpse of an unknown animal has washed up on the beach? Okay, got it. We'll head over there right away. Take a lot of pictures. Just in case the authorities try to remove it before we get there. Okay, thanks. Well, looks like we have two mysteries today.
How's that?
A sea monster and the break-in.
Break-in's no mystery. You know it and I know it. It's the ongoing cover-up by the government. And now we know why.
You think the government knows about the time travelers?
Of course they do. How else do you explain the UFO with English markings on it? It's an American craft from the future. And we also have the iPad with English markings written on the back of it as well.
Well, you may be right. But let's go get the sea monster before the next cover-up begins.
What did you guys think at home? Leave a comment in the chat. Let us know what you guys thought of that. And man, I tell you, it's been a while since I've seen that film. And it's one of my favorite from Federation Files. I know every time we watch Federation Files, like I always have the tendency to say that, but this is one of my go-to for you guys. For me personally, I like the X-Files-ish type vibe that you guys kind of delve into, seeing how they get some things right and then something so wrong, but they just interpret that. And I know you did those things on purpose, but dude, this is honestly one of my favorite films from you guys, because you just drop all those Easter eggs for us fans. Frank, what did you think of the film, man?
I thought it was fantastic. I mean, like I was saying earlier before you came in, I mean, this is also one of my favorite Federation Files. I mean, I love them all, but this one has always been the one that I keep on coming back to myself. And it's because of that that vibe of X-Files and stuff like that. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You see a spunky Mulder and a spunky Scully in there, and it's more of the sass and stuff like that. I wish that the actual X-Files would have had. It's more lighthearted, and it's always, you know, coming up with new twists and things like that. And I just love the way you just take the entire series and just weave everything in. And that's the cool part of it, because it's just so cool the way you just put it here, here, and here. And everybody knows what you're talking about. And you're just sitting there going, don't you watch TV? You would have seen all these episodes.
The thing that I really enjoyed, because the first time I watched the film, I almost like it clicked off of it. Because I'm like, what the hell? Like, is this, did he send me the right film? You know, and like, cause I was like, this isn't even a Star Trek film. What are we doing here? You know? And then when you start dropping those Easter, you see the I think it was the Voyager icon, logo. Yeah. And it's like, I started screaming like a schoolgirl, like, yay, you know? And then you start dropping those Easter eggs, you know, and you keep doing that throughout the episode. And it's, you take your time telling the story. And I think that's something that most people, fan film wise, like they beat you over the head with all these things, but you don't do that. You're very slow in how you tell your story, and you get to know the characters, and you're on the journey with them. And that's, it would have been so easy just to have been like, hey, we're in 20th century and here's this and here's this and here's this. And it's so much just reading exposition, but you didn't do that. You had them actually delving into the things. Like one of the things that I thought, the first time I read the story, watched the film, I actually thought you were having the main character, the lady, when she was talking to the, guy, the police guy, the guy in jail, talking about the escape person, the people with the laser guns. I actually thought you were talking about the people from Time's Arrow, and I was like, in my head, I was thinking, I was like, aren't they gonna be like 112 years old? Like, I mean, yeah. And I almost forgot about that episode of Carbon Creek. And then when she brings up that picture of T'Pol, I was like, you got me. Like, I forgot about that. And so that's the things that I love that you did in this episode is, and then you connected that, you put the picture right next to Spock, which was a wonderful picture drawing of, is it Jens, the German Spock?
Paul Forrest.
Okay. Forgive me. I thought it was the German Spock. But like I recognized it from Facebook, you know, the guy. Yeah. But I loved those things. Cause even as a fan film guy or, you know, cosplay guy, it's like, oh man, I recognize that dude, you know? Yeah. But I loved those little things. Cause it's like, it was an Easter egg of, you know, and it's like that's why I love Federation File stuff. Cause it's like, you do those things where it's like, if you know, you know, but you don't have to know to enjoy what you're given. And I enjoyed that. Candace, you played the niece of in the film? Forgive me. Yeah, okay. I'm bad with names and I'm bad with record. Like I'm an idiot, so forgive me if I get things. What was it like starring in, you know, or having such an important part played in the film and working with Wolf? Because I've worked with Wolf, and I refuse to do it again. You know, he's just, you know.
Well, that was my first big project with him. I honestly had quite a bit of fun with it. It was such a learning experience and getting to know everyone. They were so helpful with everything because I had never done anything like that before. I was used to stage theater. So working with them was such a great experience, and he's kind of been stuck with me since. He's tried to get rid of me. It didn't happen.
And that's what we like about you and others that we can't get rid of, because if it's not for you, we don't get to do the films. It's very hard, but it's great to see that you're here. So what got you interested in this? I mean, how did you find out about this? Did you know Wolf? Did he just walk up and down the streets with, like, you know, nylons and chocolate and stuff like that?
You know, it wouldn't surprise me if he had. My mom actually found him on Facebook and had read it off to me and thought it was something cool. So we reached out. I did an extra in one of his films before that. And then he asked me about doing Faith. And I was like, absolutely.
See, on a side note, nylons and chocolate is how I envision Wolf every time I think of him. So that's, you know, that's how I got involved with him. So, you know, that's. So you've been involved with
maybe the chocolate, but
nylons are tucked away there. It's...
Yeah.
So you've been involved. You've done other even other projects with Wolf. What other films have you done with them? Because this was the first time that I've recognized. Like I've just seen so many films. They all kind of blur together, and you know, I kind of space a lot of things off. What other films have you done with Wolf, if you don't mind me asking, or Federation Files, for say?
So we did kind of do a spinoff sequel. It's Masked, where I played Gina, We did one. It was just a regular. Star Trek one. It was Magna Rock that he helped me to learn how to direct on that one, so I got to be on the other side of the camera.
So what do you like being on?
Preferably behind, honestly.
You know, it's funny because Jason, my partner, and I in this area, I mean, Vance is my partner too, but my on-the-spot partner, we were talking about it the other day, and we said, you know, it's so much easier. You can get a lot more done if you're behind the camera and you can get the shots, because we had him running. He had to be in the scenes. We had one of our other actresses, Jen, running the camera, and he says, I just wish some of those shots I had been on top of, because I would have done it differently. So I can understand your wanting to be behind the camera, because sometimes directing gives you more satisfaction to a degree. Like I like building, you know, sets and props and stuff like that. And that's where my love is. I really enjoy doing that stuff. So, you know, anybody can look at my ugly face on film. I've been on it many times. I'd rather just be hidden. So,
well, it's one of those things where once you do acting or theater or something, like you kind of know, like if you're good at taking direction, you can give direction, because you've been on the receiving end of it, and there's a lot of satisfaction in knowing like what you want to get in a performance from somebody, and helping someone else build you know, their resume and get a good performance out of somebody. There's something a lot more rewarding than giving a good performance, because you're like, I've kind of been there, done that. But helping other people kind of step up, there's a lot of satisfaction there. I kind of agree with you on being behind the camera is a little bit more fun than being in front of it. Plus, memorizing lines. I'm terrible at memorizing lines. I have to read my shit off script and be like, what is this? Okay, I can do that. What is this? Oh, man, I can't do that. You know, so I enjoy being behind the camera, because it's I'll help them do it. I don't want to do it myself, you know. But no, that's awesome. That's cool that you are doing both directing and acting. That's awesome. So the sequel, what was it like working on that and kind of coming back to this world?
Well, he didn't want me to look the same, so I had to dye my hair blonde for 6 months. That was fun. And then I got to go rappelling down a cave, being anchored by his waist. That was great. I flew into the side and bruised my rib. Many fond memories.
So I was going to ask Glenn. Where did you get the idea for this one?
Wow, that's a multi-layered question. My first thought on this is, as I've told you in the past, I'm a big X-Files fan, so I've always wanted to try to figure out how I could do Star Trek and X-Files. Kind of like when I did my Star Wars, Star Trek crossover, I wanted something that made sense. So obviously I couldn't bring Mulder and Scully into the future and get on the Enterprise. I guess you could. I don't think anybody would really want to buy that. Mm. We could have went back in time and ran into Mulder and Scully, but I thought that was too easy as well. And then I started thinking about, okay, how do I, and actually this, I got this from Vance and he doesn't even know it. I've had many people, you know, contact me over the years saying, "Yo, we love Federation Files, or we love fan films. I'd love to do one, but you know, I don't have money for sets. I don't have money for uniforms." So I'm kicking around. How do I show people you can do this with no money? And of course, Vance came to mind. Of course, and then I'm like, "Okay, what I'm going to do? I'm going to do what I call my Vance version of Star Trek." And this is, I'm going to make a Star Trek episode with no sets, no money, just, we're going to be set in today and we're going to somehow make this work. So I was thinking about, how do we get Star Trek into the present day? Well, they did a lot of time travel episodes. So I'm like, okay, how do I tie those together? My first thought was I'll do like a newspaper reporter kind of getting all this information. I'm like, well, I don't know if people are going to buy, he just stumbles into this. So then I came up with a detective idea that, you know, they're actually trying to find UFO stuff. And it just kind of evolved from there. And I have to say that for people who don't follow the series that much, most of my actors on this one, this was their first big role with me, and none of them are Star Trek fans. So nobody knows anything, which really kind of worked out great because, for one, the actors didn't backtalk me too much, except for Candace. And I say that with all the love in the world. She knows my script better than I do. So when I'm out there directing, she tells me if I miss something. So it was great working with her because she knew her lines. She knew everybody else's lines, especially if she was in the scene, she knew everyone's lines and what they were supposed to be doing. So as you know,
Candace, we worked, would you like to move to North Carolina?
So anyway, the idea was, how do I do Star Trek on no budget and make it believable? And then I just kind of, you know, I went back and watched every time travel episode that they had and took notes and see what could tie together. And I've had some comments in the past about, you know, why didn't I tie in the movie with the whales? Well, my easy answer to that is, well, they didn't leave any evidence for these guys to find. And I wasn't going to manufacture evidence because we try to stick to canon. So this totally sticks to canon. It just happens to be in, you know, 2000, whatever. And just so you, this was our first COVID movie, by the way, too. So we shot this during the big outbreak of COVID.
I could tell.
Very careful with, you know, who was interacting with who. And, you know, we had hand sanitizer all over and we had masks available for people who wanted them. And we didn't have a lot of people together at one time either. So, you know, that kept the exposure to a minimum. To the biggest crowd we had was the funeral.
I could tell where you had where you guys have the bridge. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it looks like that's Dan's studio, like where you're on the bridge where the two windows are. I mean, am I right, you guys? It looked like you guys put a little section where the bridge is, and then like where the main office is. You just looked like you built like
a office in Dan's office.
I was going to say, it looked like that's where you guys kind of just redressed that one part, like maybe blocked it off there and then put the desk. I was looking at those windows and I was like, I know those windows. I've stared at that long enough. So I thought.
The windows of the office is actually the doorway to Dan's office.
Oh, okay. Okay. But yeah, it's amazing what you guys can do with, just what you have around. I thought it was really creative, really, really creative.
I don't think anybody would have looked at it as a set or anything. You know, I think it looks like realistically like some type of office that you would actually have, and the way that you integrated it with the building that it's on there and the door and everything else, it just looks so natural and there was a good flow to it. So
now I saw in the airport scene, like I saw you in there, of course, because of course the Where's Waldo of fan films. You know, you appear everywhere, and it's kind of like, all right, I earned my Snicker bar for the day, you know. So, but then I saw Wanda. Yep. Is it Wanda? Yes, I saw Wanda. She was in front of you, and I was like, I know her too. It's always wonderful to see the reoccurring people in the Federation files, you know, playing different parts and doing different stuff. It's interesting to hear you talk about the Star Trek IV part and how it just didn't arrive organically for your story. Cause I felt you crammed a lot of time travel elements in a cohesive story. It flowed organically, I thought. Cause again, like I said, I forgot about Carbon Creek, when you guys put that in there. I love the story. I thought it was wonderfully done. So the airport, did you guys, I think when we talked about this last time, but I forgot, you guys actually shot there for like an hour or so, like, or requested to shoot there for like when they were closer, while they were closing or something to that effect. Am I correct?
But they actually weren't closing. That's the local airport in Harrison. And what's real funny about it was they only have a flight or two a day coming out of there. So we thought we had a nice window to shoot in, but not so much. The airport attendee or whatever you call the person who runs the desk, that's our makeup girl, Michelle Reynolds. And then everybody in line was an actor. But if you're watching, when they're watching us in line, you see a girl come in. I shouldn't call them girls. I know they're women. A woman comes in carrying a suitcase and stuff and looks flabbergasted at the line. That was a real person coming in. She was way early for her flight. And she walks in and she's like, what's going on here? This, you know, because the flights that go out of there are like a 6-person plane. And there's like 10 people in line. She's probably thinking, I'm not getting on this flight. So we had to go get it. We had to go sign and release and stuff and, you know, and told her what we were doing. But that was a real reaction of, oh my God, I'm standing in this line. But yeah, that was fun there. But that was, a real airport in Harrison. It's, do we even call it a terminal, Candace? It's more like a desk, right?
So, they go to Memphis and Dallas and that's it, back and forth all day.
Yeah, but there's no, like, you know, you have to walk out onto the tarmac and walk up a ladder to get in the plane. It's that kind of an airport.
I love those airports. Yeah, I love that type of airport. They have TSA there too, right? Don't they have TSA there? They have TSA there too, right?
No. Oh, no. No. I could have went anywhere. I wanted.
Okay. So, all right. So, you're Peter. All right. Yeah. No, the reason I was thinking that is years ago, I worked for a company and we were up in the Chicago area and we were coming back, and the feeder aircraft that I was taking to go back to O'Hara was like one of those little small ones where everybody closed down for lunch. TSA was there. It might have been because they came in, they joked with us and everything else, walked out to the tarmac. And as we got into the 6-seater aircraft, I turned around, there was an a Cessna 310 behind us. I'm going, yep, this is really a small airport.
Oh, funny.
So Candace, I have a question for you. Wolf had said most of the people on the film was not a Star Trek fan. Were you a Star Trek fan? No. Okay.
I'm a Star Trek fan now.
No. Yeah. Are you one now? Yeah. So, you're killing me. Oh man. They're gonna start negative commenting this podcast now. It's okay. We still love you, Candace. It's okay.
We can blame it on Glenn. He told me not to. He was worried I'd try to act like those people.
Got it.
Everything's always my fault. That's the way
that goes. Do you even like science fiction?
I'm sorry?
Do you even like science fiction? I'm just curious.
Oh. Candace? Depends on
Wow, so we have an actual actress here.
Yes. Yes. It's a job. It's for my resume, guys. Just leave me alone. It's okay. And that's the thing. Like some people, like you go online and you see this especially with like MCU stuff. Like whenever they get questioned, they're like, "Hey, so what did you think of?" Avengers Endgame or something, you know, and they're like, I haven't seen that movie, and they may have acted in like a previous Marvel film, and some of the nerds will just get pissed off. They're like, how could they not have seen this? It's like, dude, they're in 5 films a year. Get off their back. Like, I mean, they have a life, you know. I mean, they want to go live their life, not go watch a movie on something. And they just got done filming with like a CGI rat for like 3 months. They don't give a shit. Like they want let them live their life. You know, that it's a job, dude. You know, it's okay. You know, leave the nerding up to us. Like we'll sit there and nitpick dumb stuff. You know, it's okay, guys. It's okay. You know, so, but I gotta say it was really good to, everybody did all around really good on this film. It really comes across as authentic, and I do kind of agree that maybe the fact that not everybody was a Star Trek fan They were just real people, because everybody here comes across as authentic. The two main leads, and we discussed this last time, I loved them so much. And I know the main actress. I forget, what's her name?
Caitlin Bailey.
Oh, Caitlin. Why do I keep on calling her Candace?
Because this is Candace. No, this is Candace, but he wants to talk about Caitlin.
Yeah, dude, I always want to talk about Caitlin. Like, that is my, that I am.
Wait a minute. Okay, reset.
It's okay, Frank. Last interview we did, I kept calling Caitlin Candace, and she had to keep correcting me, so.
Well, that's what all of a sudden I just shifted for some reason.
Here. We are all showing our age, so it is okay, you know. But no, like,
you know, Candace was like 15 when she did that. You do know that, right?
Oh, really?
Yep.
So now you're 16.
Now she's like 18 or 19.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess I would make, yeah. But the, like, I'm a huge, like, seeing her with Kate, with, like, where she was in that film, and then seeing, like, where she was with Crisis.
Uh-huh.
Like, how she's kind of just, like, she seems to be, like, really just grown as an actress. And that was, like, I that was the first, correct me if I'm wrong, but that was the first thing that she had shot in with you guys, wasn't it, Caitlin?
No, I think I was her first member.
Doppelganger before that, but it was just...
Yeah. Was it?
You like Candace, when people, you know, answer my casting calls, I usually give them something small to do. For a couple reasons. One, to make sure that they actually want to do this. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to, you know, have someone, you know, answer a casting call. You give them a main role and find out they only want to be there 20 minutes. And now what do you do?
Right.
Candace has been a background actress in several other films she didn't mention. I mean, she was in Mud's Mission. Do you remember seeing her in there? She's the girl in the bar in the white dress and blue hair that hits on the press.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I'll have to go back and rewatch that. Okay.
She was in she likes being in the bar. When she was 15, she was in the bar for Doppelganger. But yeah, she does a lot for me. And that's why I gave her a chance. She got to direct me in Escape from Magna Roma. So, and you know, while we're talking about the other leads of the show we're talking about, you know, Buddy, look up Buddy on IMDb. He's a professional actor now. He's got work on Netflix, and he was working on some Western series.
Oh, really? Yeah, Buddy. I like Buddy. Okay. So are you doing anything now, Candace, besides the Federation Files?
Project-wise, not at the moment. That he'll message me like 3 days before and say, hey, can you do this? Okay.
she likes the limelight.
Oh, sure.
So which out of the Federation File films that you've worked on, which one are you the most proud of? Did you enjoy the most?
I'm gonna disappoint you, but it was definitely Mask.
Mask. I love Mask, and that's our least Star Trek one. That's probably why she likes it the most.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. No, Mask was actually good. Hey, I do have a question for you on the fact that you left that Easter egg on the floor at the very end. Were you planning to do another sequel with that picture?
They're supposed to be the third
well,
one.
Well, I guess I should ask you this. That Easter egg right there, do you know what it is?
It was familiar, and I was trying to remember what it was, and I couldn't really pin it down.
That's the ship called Quark's Treasure.
Oh.
So it really, not necessarily a you know, bringing something next, because that really had everything to do, that whole episode, the Little Green Men episode. Now, if you really want to dig into Easter eggs, most people haven't noticed this, but when they're going through the box that Candace brought in, her mother's, you know, relics, everything they pulled out of that box had something to do with the Little Green Men episode. So if you go back and watch, there's a clipboard that's kind of a, looks like butcher block. That was hanging on the wall when they had him captured back in 1947.
Okay.
They pulled out a burlap bag. That's the bag that went over Quark's head when they were taking him over. So everything that they pulled out of that box was from that episode. So when you were talking about me throwing Easter eggs in, everything in that film was an Easter egg if you really thought about it. So the only thing I didn't have in there from Little Green Men was Quark's ship. So at the at the end, we show in the photograph fell out of the newspaper, and that was a, someone had taken a picture of the crashed ship from 1947.
Now that's what I was wondering if it was, because I don't recall seeing that before. Yeah, all right.
So so that's what that was about, and you're talking about the how great the acting was in this one. The girl who played Isis, her name's Olivia Disney. Mm-hmm. Do you guys recognize her from anywhere?
We had a discussion about this, I think, down at
After that, Dan made her reel, and she got picked up by Hallmark. She did like six or eight movies for Hallmark.
That's what it was. Yeah, after I heard that. she was on Hallmark. Yeah, so
yeah. So we had a good cast.
So one thing I wanted to know, when the art, because I love seeing art. I'm a huge fan of just staring at people's drawings and pictures. Who did the art for, and how did you go about getting it done? You did the art?
I did the art.
You draw?
My goal in life was to be a graphic artist. My parents poo-pooed that idea, so I joined the military.
Dude, I did not know that. That is awesome. Dude, you are phenomenal. Like, I used to draw back in high school, and I stopped to go pursue, you know, my friend's band and draw, and then, you know, gave that up just because, you know, reality kicks in.
I've had work in an art museum in Illinois. Yeah.
I did not know that. That is wild.
No, that's like another life. I hadn't drawn in maybe 40 years, but I needed those, so I sat down and threw them out there.
I feel ashamed that I have never once said you draw me like one of your French girls. That is terrible. Man.
I don't draw unless it's absolutely necessary.
Well, you are, dude, that was really, like, I really was blown away by that art. Because, I mean, really.
The Kirk was not very good, but the Spock was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing about it was like when I was looking at the Kirk, I mean, yes, it wasn't William Shatner or whoever. Like, but again, you have to look at it in the context of what they were drawing. They were drawing an interpretation of someone's description, and you know, so it's not going to be
a police artist drawing.
Yeah.
I didn't want them to be really good, but I did want the audience to know what they were supposed to be.
Yeah. Right, right. Dude, I love those drawings because, again, like when Mona and I went to Vegas, we went to a couple art galleries. And, you know, I'm not a huge art gallery type person, but, like, I'll go when she wants to because it's like, happy wife, happy life, you know. And I enjoy seeing, you know, drawings when other people do it or paintings, you know, and I kind of get off on that type of stuff, you know. And to see those, you know, I was like, that's a great interpretation of Kirk and Spock, especially from the episodes. Cause you look at it and just seeing those side by side, you know, if you see Kirk, you're not going to know what it is. But you see Kirk side by side as Spock, you're like, I know exactly what that is, you know? So it didn't have to be a spot on, William Shatner, but you see a side by side, you're like, that's a piece of the action. Oh, that's, the Gary Sevenwell. Like you know what you're looking at, you know? So tip of my hat to you, man. That was really good. I loved it. I loved it a lot.
I do whatever I need to do to get the episode done.
Like said every fan filmmaker, dude.
Whatever it takes.
That's it.
Trades, master of none.
Yep.
So.
So.
Well, Well, I think we're about good. I have to go to my meeting here in about 10 minutes. So I think we're going to cut this a little short tonight. So with that being said, I know here probably next month, we're probably going to do another Federation Files film. If you are happy to come back, Wolf.
Definitely.
Okay, awesome. And Candace, if it's in a film that you're in, we'd love to have you back. If you are willing to come back, we'd love to have you on.
Yeah.
So
maybe we'll do Mask.
I'm up for that if Candace wants to do it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Then
we had a lot of fun with Mask too. Let me tell you, if we do Mask, you got to ask about the alien at the end because just getting that shot was impossible.
Fair enough. Well, then let's do this. Let's do that next month. Let's do that next month when we do you guys, and we'll have you both back. So, sound like a plan?
Sounds good. I'll just have to make it work. So I'll need a few more days' notice, Glenn.
Well, this to be fair, I declined doing this because I'm in Chicago, supposed to be going to a wedding, and he asked me a while ago, and I said, no, I can't do it. And then he asked me again 3 days ago, and I'm like, well, I think I can squeeze it in, so let me see if I can get someone to come on with me.
But I'll plan it tonight. I'll send it by morning. You guys will have a month's notice. So we'll make it work. So, and I'll give you guys plenty of notice. So, all right. So you guys in the audience heard it. Next month we're doing Masks, and All right. With that being said, Wolf, Candace, thank you guys for joining us. Frank, it's always a pleasure to see you, my friend, and everybody in the audience. Thank you for joining us. With that being said, be genuine, be safe, and keep on geeking on, guys.
If you enjoyed this podcast, you can support us at patreon.com/beyondtrek.
We are Beyond Trek Podcast. Lower your inhibitions and surrender your years. We will add inspirational and hilarious Trek content to your day. Your attention will adapt to subscribe to us. Resistance is futile.